The Leach Report Radio Network is on the air with the voice of the Wildcats, Tom Leach. Join in with the rest of Big Blue Nation to get the latest insights and opinions on your Kentucky Wildcats from an all-star lineup of guests. If you have a question for Tom or one of our guests, tweet him to @LeachReport or email to LeachReport@gmail.com. And you can call toll-free anywhere across the Commonwealth of Kentucky at 877-904-1080. Now, here's Tom.
Good morning, everybody. Tom is out today. I assume traveling down to Gainesville for the last regular season game of the Kentucky Wildcats versus Florida. Cameron Mills filling in. Big show today. Mike DeCourcy is going to join us here in a little bit. He is our one guest that we've got lined up and presented by Sleep Outfitters. I had another guest lined up. What I want to do today is talk, especially the first half of the show. Mike's going to join us the second half of the show. But we can certainly take your calls if you'd like to interact with us at the Leach Report. Or you might want to interact with me personally at Cameron Mills with a Z on the end and the M, because I don't know that Tom's going to be interacting right now, as he's probably traveling or getting ready to travel. You can also email at the Leach, or excuse me, it's leachreport@gmail.com. I don't know that anyone's going to be manning that at the moment either, so I may not be able to get through there. But you can interact via my Twitter account, which is at the Mills Show, or at Cameron Mills, I should say, and then the Leach Report on Facebook, or you can call, and that's really where I want to go this first half of the show. Call it 1-877-904-1080. And we're going to talk a little bit about what the really only thing that's fascinating me, other than the Cats kind of turn this last little bit of the season, is we've struggled all year for this team to have an identity. We've struggled all year waiting for this team to kind of show us what they can do to play together as a team. And they seem to finally be doing that as they have run off after a four-game losing streak. I think it was four games in a row that they lost. Now they're on a four-game winning streak. They're 16-2 at home, 4-5 on the road, and 1-2 on neutral sites. But in conference, they're 10-7, which only four games ago, they were 6-7, something like that, which they were looking at playing they were going to have to play the bye games. They weren't going to get the bye. They were going to have to play at least four games in the SEC tournament instead of those last three, which, you know, you start on Friday. And I think now the SEC tournament, maybe they're starting on Wednesday. The SEC is so large. It's such far and away from the SEC that I'm used to back when my teams played. You just kind of guarantee a Kentucky team is going to play on Friday, get that bye, not have to play on Thursday, but play Friday, Saturday, and Sunday. So hopefully the Cats are going to be able to play as few games in that SEC tournament. And this little win, this little turnaround they've had at the end of the season, which is not just a matter of the fact that they're winning games. It's exciting to see how they're doing it, that they're playing better. They seem to have a grasp on everything that Coach Calipari wants them to have a grasp on, and they're playing better. As far as, though, the Wildcat news of the day, presented by Cardinal Point Financial Group, a private wealth advisory practice of Ameriprise Financial Services. You can find links to these stories on the Bud Light Leach Report page at TomLeachKY.com. Quade Green boldly states, I like this, boldly, the Wildcats must spank Florida. Not exactly sure why they need to spank them, but they do need to win to put five straight games together. That article is on MSN.com. Scout.com talks about the loss of Bassett for Florida. That is a big, big loss, as Dante Bassett out, I guess, a game ago, two games ago, maybe it was just the last game, suffered a concussion. He is the walk-on freshman, a redshirt freshman. He will not play against the Cats. So that's it makes you feel better that, okay, we've got a better chance of beating a team that beat us up here in Rupp Arena when we go down to Gainesville. Gainesville is one of the best college basketball atmospheres there is in the SEC. There's better places to play. There's more difficult places to play. But as far as a perfect conglomeration of college basketball atmosphere, there's very little as good as the O'Connell Center down in Gainesville with the Florida Gators. But Bassett's out, so that gives the Cats a little bit, somewhat of an advantage, though you kind of like to play these teams at full force. It just kind of, for your momentum, for your confidence, you want to play these teams that are playing all out. You want to hit them at the top and then still beat them. On KSR, Ole Miss brought the aggression, but Gabriel didn't back down from the fight. As you saw, Winion's the one that kind of got that first technical, and I don't know the player's name. I forget him, but I was at the game. Watched he and Winion kind of get chippy there at the beginning of the game. And then that same player wound up pushing I guess it was Knox or someone else. And then there was that whole, if you were at that game, there was nothing more frustrating than watching these officials basically spend 30 minutes, it seemed like, trying to decide what was what. Thankfully, they got it right. As the player that Wynyan got into his little chippy fights with was thrown out of the game after receiving his second technical. But Wynyan held his own, kind of kept calm, said some words, but then kind of backed down, and really had one of his best games of his career as Ole Miss goes home defeated. Another win for the Cats there, fourth in a row. Harold Leader has, why was Kentucky basketball attendance down this year? All kinds of reasons we could discuss for that. If you have a theory, feel free to call in at 1-877-904-1080, because I'd like to get into that, is why you all think the attendance was down. My reason is, hey, my television at home is very, very big. I can watch replays, and that couch is very, very comfortable. But as far as you, those of you who attend all the games, is there a reason you didn't go? Was it that they weren't playing well? Was it something else? What does Kentucky need to do to up attendance back at Rupp Arena and continue to have us have the fantastic home court advantage? Courier-Journal has UK can do something special against Florida, or can UK do something special against Florida? Sea of Blue has the article of how high can Kentucky go? And, excuse me. And SaturdayDownSouth.com, who will be, excuse me, who will be the SEC Player of the Year? Certainly some Wildcats up in favor for that. Sorry for the cough, everybody. Anyway, so those articles can be found at the Leach Report or at TomLeachKY.com on the Cardinal Point Financial Group Private Wealth Advisory Practice of Ameriprise Financial Services. And you can find all the links to those stories on the Bud Light / Leach Report page there at TomLeachKY.com. All right, we're going to come right back, talk a little about all this FBI stuff going on in the world of college basketball. Feel free to call in at 877-904-1080. This is the Leach Report, served up by Wild Eggs.
This is where the Big Blue Nation gathers. It's Talk Radio 1080 and the Leach Report, followed by Kentucky Sports Radio.
Welcome back to the Leach Report. Tom is off today. Cameron Mills filling in. One of the questions that we asked in the opening segment was, why was UK attendance down this year? An article up in the Herald Leader today, which is part of Leach Report Friday Wildcat Links. And Greg's called in with a theory, I suppose. Right, Greg?
Hello, Cameron. How you doing?
I'm well. How about you?
Good. Hey, first of all, I wanted to say thank you for hitting that shot against Duke years ago, number one.
You're welcome.
That was a grand one. But I think one of the problems in this, you know, some people will probably disagree with this, but one of the problems is ticket prices. Now, you know, I've got a ticket stuff from 2003. That's 15 years ago.
Yeah.
Upper level was $13 all year. Every game was $13. They played decent games at home. And we don't really do that anymore. We play the big games are all played in Chicago and New York and everywhere else. But, you know, it's a 400% increase in 15 years.
What is the Upper Arena now, Greg?
It makes $45,000 a year. Well, I mean, I went to the Tennessee game and it was like $65.
Okay, for Upper Arena?
Now what, you know, your average fella or average family to take a wife or a kid.
Right.
I mean, I was sitting behind some kid that was like 30 years old, and he had his little 7-year-old son, and it was the first time they'd ever been to a game. He goes, we can't afford them.
Yeah.
But somebody had given him tickets. The little kid was having a blast. He'll never forget as long as he lives.
Right.
But, you know, you think about it. If you make $45,000 a year, you can't. There's not too many people that can afford to go to these games anymore.
Well, I think the question, though, is you may not be able to afford a couple of things. Number one, the reason ticket prices increase is because, okay, if we want to stay, and I'm not defending the increase, I'm just explaining this has got to be why they happen, is if we want to stay at the top of NCAA basketball, then we've got to have the money to spend on brand new locker rooms every other year, you know, to fly these kids around charter. We want it to look like it's a professional atmosphere, and I think that's where the ticket increases come. Because, you know, all this stuff, like, you know, we talk about Coach Cal making $8 million a year. Most of that money, if you look at his contract, most of that money comes from, you know, all the advertisers that come in. Everything that JMI puts together, like him doing his coach's show and Paul Miller Ford and all these places that put in. His contract from the university, I think UK only pays him like $400,000. a year. The rest of that money basically comes from the advertisers jumping in to be a part of the Coach Cal experience. So I don't think it's so much that. But my question is does the fact that, you know, the Upper Arena, for example, where you say now it costs $65 a game, does that have anything to do with the fact that we are squeezing people together?
The bottom line is, $65 a game is not the case. Some games are lower.
Oh, okay.
They don't do it that way. But the thing is every game is priced differently, I think, in the whole arena, from what I understand. It used to be that the ticket prices for upper level were blank and lower level were blank. But now they do it per game.
So it depends on who we're playing.
Played at home at Rupp this year.
It depends on who we're playing, is what you're saying.
At Rupp this year. Upper level season tickets are like $2,300.
Yeah.
I mean, that's what most people are doing, like you're saying, Cameron, and sitting at home and watching on their big screen.
Yeah. Because that's the more comfortable way of going. It's not as much fun, because it's certainly fun to go to the games and interact with other fans. But,
by all means. I mean,
yeah.
But that's why, again, that's why your average fella loves to go to the SEC tournament, because if you remember as a player, probably people went nuts at those SEC tournaments.
Well, and also for every ticket you have, Greg, you're getting two games. You're paying for a session. So you're not just getting to watch Kentucky play. You're getting to watch the two teams before or after Kentucky play. So one ticket to an SEC session, you're getting, you know, two for one. So no matter what it costs, you're getting two for one, and you're getting able to enjoy another SEC caliber game, which this year actually means something, because the SEC is a little bit better than it has been in the past. You know, one of the things that amazes me, and I never quite understand this, though I believe it, is how many people tell me, and this may feed into exactly what you're saying, Greg, how many people tell me they've never been able to go to a game at Rupp Arena because they can't get tickets. Well, every year, if you look online, there are tickets available. UK will, even halfway through the season, they'll put out an email. If you're on their email list, it'll say, hey, the Monmouth game is open. There's tickets here. There's tickets here. There's tickets here. But I think the reason people are saying they can't go to the game or they've never been to the game is not so much that there aren't tickets available. It's that they can't afford to take, as you say, necessarily four people to a game. They can't take their whole family. They can't take their grandmother or their aunt or their uncle, who has never been able to go to a game as long as they've lived.
Yeah, I mean, it's parking's $15, $20.
That's true.
I don't expect anything for free, and I don't expect the tickets to be $13 either. But a 400% increase, most people's pay has not gone up 400% in 15 years, is all I'm saying.
Yeah. All right, Greg, appreciate the call.
Thanks, Bunch. See you.
Thank you, man. I get it. It's one of those things where at the same time I hear people complaining about the football tickets increase. And look, if you go back to before Barnhart got here, there were a lot of opportunities. Tickets weren't as expensive, but then he got here and basically raised the bar for everything, and that includes ticket pricing. And when ticket pricing goes up, I get it. There are some people that are going to complain, but at the same time, I want Kentucky to be the upper echelon of everything. I understand that means it's going to cost money to have the nicest locker rooms, to have the nicest facilities, to have, you know, to treat our players, no matter what division or no matter what sport, better than anyone else. We want this to be a place that everybody wants to come, not just because in the basketball case it's an NBA stepping stone, but we want our gymnastics to be treated the best. We want our women's golf and men's golf to be treated the best, to have the best facilities, and that costs money. And all the money comes from football and basketball. Those are the two sports that we have, the revenue sports, where money comes in to our program from those two areas, and that's probably the reason. And I'm guessing, assuming, but that's probably the reason everything is up. All right, we're going to take another break. We'll be right back. This is the Leach Report, served up by Wild Eggs.
This is the Leach Report on Talk Radio 1080. You can interact with the show via Twitter at Leach Report. Now, here's Tom.
One of the most exciting, or I guess confounding, things that happened this past week regarding the FBI release, the NCAA allegations that came from the FBI release, and again, it was Yahoo Sports that released the information, is nothing really came out of it. I mean, even the thing that happened at Arizona with Sean Miller is, and it made no sense to me why Arizona would take, supposedly, and I don't think it came out of the Yahoo Sports. I think it was just leaked some other way. But all of a sudden, you've got Sean Miller, who has to sit out Arizona's game as head coach, sit out Arizona's game against Oregon, I believe it was, because supposedly there was a wiretap, an FBI wiretap, which basically had him caught on the phone talking about basically paying $100,000 for this kid named Ayton, I believe is his last name, DeAndre Ayton. And the player wound up playing for Arizona. He got him. Now, did he get him because he paid $100,000 or someone paid $100,000? Who knows? I guess that'll be worked out in the next few weeks. But for some reason, Arizona told Sean Miller, no, you don't go coach. But the player went and played, which was utterly fascinating to me, because if you look back at what happened with Louisville, the reason their banner had to come down, the reason they lost and had to forfeit all of those games, because basically the bottom line was they played ineligible players, and the players were ineligible because they had received benefits that your average student-athlete or your average student couldn't receive. They got perks that other players and students didn't get, so they were ineligible. And that's what the NCAA is, the quote-unquote, you see me do my air quotes, the epitome of fairness. And so they were declared ineligible. Now, the way this works, and I've said this a few times since this thing came out, it's very, very easy to be ineligible for the NCAA. The rule book's 1,700 pages long. It's some of the rules you would be, if you didn't read it, you would be, I mean, absolutely irritated, blown out of the water to know what was a rule, what wasn't a rule. I think in my 4 years at UK, I think I was probably declared ineligible as a player maybe four or five times, and which is silly when you consider that I still played that evening. And the reason I still played that evening, if I broke a rule in the morning or the night before, and it's very easy to break these rules, they're not all recruiting violations. Sometimes it's just as a student athlete what you can and can't do or should not do. If I broke a rule the night before and it wound up getting to compliance, they would declare me ineligible. They would self-report. I would have to come in for an interview. They would have to drain me of every ounce of truth about the situation they could. They educated me about what I should and should not do, how I would not go about doing this again. And then they had to go to the NCAA and say, here's what we've done. The player is ineligible. We're self-reporting that the player is ineligible. We're self-reporting that there's been an NCAA rule broken. And then here's what we've done to educate the player to make sure this doesn't happen again. Typically, within 2 to 3 to 4 hours, the NCAA would reinstate me as an eligible player, and I would get to play again. The reason being is that if you play an ineligible player, 9 times out of 10, that you're going to have to forfeit that game if it comes out later. That's why coming to the NCAA, and I know a lot of people don't think this, especially after everything that's happened the last week or so, going to the NCAA and kind of self-reporting and saying, okay, we're going to self-punish, a lot of people don't think that works. It actually does in some sense, because it shows that you're not trying to lie to the NCAA. And it shows the NCAA good faith that, you know what, we're trying to do it the right way. Somebody messed up, but we're trying to do it the right way. And that's what they were trying to do. But with this Sean Miller thing, they held him back, but they didn't hold the player back. If it turns out that this player was bought by Sean Miller, NCAA, and he wound up playing in that game, the interesting thing is going to be is if it comes out that that was true, he's going to be declared ineligible at some point. And they're going to have to forfeit that game and basically any other game that he played this year, which is exactly what happened to Louisville. The reason we were looking at Knox earlier this week, even though the Knox thing was no big deal, it was an NCAA violation. If he, in fact, had his dinner bought by an agent or by anybody, really, that he was going to have to declare himself ineligible, or the NCAA or school was, and then declare him eligible again. They didn't bother to do that as far as I know, so they're obviously not too worried about that. Mike DeCourcy's coming up next. We're going to talk to Mike about all this stuff, plus just college basketball in general. We'll be right back on the Leach Report. Cameron Mills filling in. Leach Report served up by Wild Eggs.
Find out more about the voice of the Cats and get great coverage of the Big Blue at TomLeachKY.com.
Welcome back to the Leach Report. Cameron Mills filling in for Tom Leach, as I assume he's on the road. But in lieu of him, and really in lieu of myself, because you're going to hear some stuff now that's just infinitely better than anything I could offer anybody out there. And that's because Mike DeCourcy from the Sporting News is on. And Mike, is it fair to say that you are a defender of, say, AAU and travel ball teams at large?
At large, yes. I mean, obviously there are bad practices within some of those teams, but there are also bad practices within high school, college, and pro teams. So I don't think that it is inherently a bad thing. I think that it's interesting because you may not know. I think you do know this, because I think I talked to you from Brazil once upon a time.
Yep.
I also follow and I also follow soccer very closely and
Absolutely.
Write about it a lot. Not nearly, obviously, it's the immersion that I have with college basketball, but it's interesting because in soccer, there is this whole concept of pay to play. So that, for instance, if you are a young soccer interested athlete, in order to get really good competition, more than likely you have to pay for it. Now, in most cases, that means your family having to pony up thousands of dollars, and there are some workarounds for that, but it's a challenge to get access to them. And in AAU basketball, almost no one has to pay big money, and only a few have to pay some. And certainly for the high-level prospect, very, very, very rare. If they're paying, it's a choice because they want to be affiliated with a certain program and they can afford it. But in nearly all cases, they don't have to worry about that. And to dismiss what players receive in terms of development through AAU, I think that's antiquated. Because although the coaching and that sort of thing, generally there's not as much practice time and all that sort of stuff. But the opportunity for someone like Anthony Davis when he was in high school to be able to play against someone like DeMarcus Cousins. I don't think DeMarcus was the same year, but, you know,
they would have had to play together at some point.
What other bigs there were. But to be able to play against someone like that is a big difference from being as is the case in a lot of times, being, you know, the 6'11 kid playing against a bunch of 6'4 kids that all crowd around you and let your teammates shoot from the outside.
Right.
That's not always a great option.
Right. It just basically helps in your eyes. It helps because the competition's always better if you're playing in these AAU teams. You're not going against, as you said, a 6'11 Anthony Davis playing against a bunch of 5'3 guys and, you know, having to play every position. He's playing against guys he's going to see later on in his career, which is obviously going to help him play better.
Yeah, I think there's no question. Now, if you could make AAU have great coaches and all that, it would be better than it is. But again, you know, I mean, these things cost money. And in order for, you know, it's already kind of being, you know, again, where does the money come from that AAU is not a fee-for-play kind of situation? Well, that comes from the shoe companies that everybody can do.
Right.
I mean, there's a lot in this that is much more nuanced than the public conversation would lead people to believe.
Well, let's get to the public conversation then, because there's two things that stick out to me with all this FBI, NCAA, Yahoo Sports report that came out last week, is that there's two solutions that I heard put forth. Number one is, you know what, if you pay the players, this wouldn't happen. I don't necessarily think that's true. That's not going to necessarily stop whatever corruption there is in college basketball. And of course, you wrote an article here not long ago about LeBron James, who said, you know, kind of easily said there's corruption in NCAA, and you just kind of thought that was unfair.
I did. I don't think it's fair. Like, you know, I had people criticize me saying that I was criticizing his word choice. Well, if you're going to throw out a charge of corruption,
right,
you don't think it should be well aimed? I mean, is that too much to ask? I mean, you got to be kidding me. I mean, I think that's the very least you can ask, is if you are going to allege corruption, that you should say, okay, this is what is corrupt and this is how it is corrupt. I mean, I think that's the minimum. And so I don't think that there's any way that that's defensible, what he said. Now, if he had said there is corruption in college athletics, well, my goodness, of course there is. There are 355 Division I programs. Do we think they're all pristine? I mean, even if you had the majority doing it, even if you had almost near unanimity, you'd still have some. So that's an easy thing. But to allege corruption in the NCAA is to say basically that the people who work in Indianapolis are crooked. And there's nothing to support that. There is absolutely zero. I mean, we saw with FIFA in 2015, I believe it was, with the international soccer body, we saw people that were taken away from their hotels by the authorities.
Right.
You've never seen that with the NCAA.
What is it that was there anything that came out in this report that shocked you, that you were like, oh, I didn't expect this to come out?
In Yahoo's, no, nothing shocked me in Yahoo's. What shocked me in all of this?
Yeah.
And I talked to a coach just a week ago who express, you know, I was shocked at the time, and it was interesting to hear him, you know, revisit this. He had been a college assistant coach for 25 years, maybe, at the high Division I level.
Yeah.
And he said that he was just shocked to hear the stories of the allegations and charges against particular assistant coaches that they had supposedly been taken money from agents or money managers to funnel their players toward those people.
Right.
And I agreed. I was astonished by that because most of the people that were all of the people that were arrested were very well compensated in it, who were assistant coaches and very
sure.
well compensated. You know, Chuck Person was charged with that, and
yeah.
and again, I'm not saying he was guilty, but he was charged with that.
Yeah.
And I mean, Chuck made like $22 million a year in the NBA. $22 million, I think, in his career in the NBA. And then he was average. I think he was making somewhere in the neighborhood of $300,000 to $400,000 at Auburn.
Yeah.
So yeah, I was shocked that that would be alleged against him. Absolutely.
I think the thing is though is that one thing I think we all learn as we get older and start making money on our own. It just doesn't matter how much we have. We always want more. I mean, it just seems to be the case of most people. I tell you what, Mike, we're going to take a quick break. When we come back, I want to talk more about this Kentucky Wildcat team, the ups and downs, ebbs and flows they've had this season, and where you think, how far you expect this Kentucky team to go as we move into March Madness. This is the Leach Report. Cameron Mills filling in, served up by Wild Eggs. We'll be right back.
Can't get to a radio? You can listen to us live on the web at talkradio1080.com. Now, back to the show.
Real quick, before we get back to Mike DeCourcy, the sporting news, Brian in Houston, I assume that's Houston, Texas, just tweets in and wants to make sure I remind everybody, throw some love to the UK baseball team, ranked number 7 nationally, and they are 8-1 and have started off this season exactly the way we would hope. They're playing down in Houston at Minute Maid Park this weekend. Back to Mike DeCourcy. Mike, let me throw you one curveball real quick, because we were talking about this before before you came on during the show about the low attendance at UK this year, and I think it's fair to say that all attendances are dropping. Certainly, we saw television ratings drop in the NFL. We saw attendance at UK kind of drop this year. Is there any particular thing that you look at that says, you know, this is what universities need to do? Programs need to do to kind of increase attendance? Is it ticket prices or anything that kind of stands out to you? And I know it's not something we said we were going to talk to you about, but just your opinion as someone who follows sports so closely.
Well, I think if attendance is going down, then I think ticket prices is where you start. I mean,
yeah.
If demand is lower, then I think that you have to increase, you know, you have to juice demand by making the tickets more affordable, or you make the tickets more attractive. Well, how do you do that? I mean, in that case, better opponents at home. I mean, obviously, this is a great year in the SEC, and I think that the crowds have been better for SEC games, have they not?
I believe so overall, yeah, because you're right. The SEC is playing better, and that's become more apparent as the year's gone on.
So, you know, I think that probably where most of the attendance struggles were came in, you know, in the bye game period. You know, obviously the nature of this Kentucky team demanded that the schedule not be as challenging as it was in prior years. But I'm a big believer in this camp. I think all colleges need to get back to playing more on their campuses.
Neutral games.
You go to Maui or whatever, that's one thing. But these, you saw the thing in New Orleans.
Yeah.
I mean, that was a disaster.
Yeah.
And UK should not be involved in that kind of attendance disaster. There's too many people who want to see them in too many places.
Yeah. Yeah, and you know, New Orleans is not exactly one of those places. It's like a destination wedding. It's nice to get away. It's nice to go down there, but it costs so much more to get down there to go see your team play when they could easily be playing in Rupp Arena. All right, Mike, let's get to the Wildcats just overall this season. And your thoughts is this was supposed to be a season where Kentucky, this wasn't going to be a typical John Calipari team. We knew we were going to have a dip, but did we have the kind of dip that you expected? I mean, did we play above or below the expectations that, say, Mike DeCourcy had for Kentucky going into this season?
Well, you know, I'll admit that, you know, that I erred in my original projections because, you know, you look at recruiting lists, you've maybe seen some of the guys. Maybe not all of them. And there's, you know, and so you just think, well, they'll get it together and they'll be great, you know, because that's what every other, that's what they do every other year. And then I saw, you know, I went out to Colorado and I saw the guys out there and they were fine, but they weren't, there wasn't anybody, you know, Tommy and PJ, I mean, you know, they were good players, Kevin, they were good out there, but they weren't so great that you're like, oh goodness, wait till they get there, you know?
Right.
And so at that point, maybe, it, you know, you should have started dialing them down, but, you know, it didn't feel compelled to do that. And that, but once you got them out there, you realize that there's nobody on that team that you can just say, well, this guy's going to do this every single night.
Right.
And then you had some injuries, which made it even more challenging. I mean, Vanderbilt, what would he be now if he played 30 games?
Yeah, exactly.
Compared to what he is now, he's played 8, which is pretty good. And of course, the what Baker might have added, I don't like to depend on guys who were not the highest level guys, but he might have added something. He might have added some shooting on a team that doesn't have great shooting. So, you know, I think that there's a lot of reasons why they are where they are, but I will tell you this. I don't think there's very many people who thought they'd be where they are now 3 weeks ago.
Yeah.
They certainly didn't look like they were headed for this.
Well, and that's one of the frustrating things as a former player, knowing how a season kind of ebbs and flows. You're going to have, you know, whether you're losing games or not, or winning games or not, you're going to have moments where you're not playing your best basketball. And then you're going to have moments when you could be losing two or three games in a row and be playing your best basketball, except this year it's just kind of showed up. You know what? When we're not playing great, we're losing. We're losing 4 in a row, which is the first time a Cal coach team at Kentucky, at any rate, has lost 4 in a row. But at the same time, now we've kind of turned the corner. The question, though, is, and I know you didn't get to see the Ole Miss game, which we did kind of win going away, but do you feel like this Kentucky team has now turned a corner? Because that's what it always takes. There's always this kind of thing, oh, now we get it. Now we're going to play our best basketball of the season. Do you think that's happened with this team, or do you think there's still lessons to be learned?
Well, I think there are always lessons. And this team, because it's so young, and there are flaws. I mean, I watched the Arkansas game, and they were terrific in a lot of areas. But in that particular game, it may be because of the way Arkansas was oriented. I saw some really, really suspect pick and roll defense from Shea,
yeah,
for instance.
Yeah.
And I'm trying to think, well, was he not doing that before, or did I just not notice it because, you know, the other teams weren't, you know, didn't have Jalen Barford out there. You know what I mean? So I don't know whether or not that's something that, I can't say whether that's something that I look at as a persistent problem, because I hadn't noticed it before. Or whether it might be something that if you play a particular team in the NCAA tournament, let's say you're the 4 in Villanova's region, and now you got to deal with Jalen Brunson. You know, obviously that's not a terrible problem to have because it means you're in the Sweet 16.
Right.
But can you deal with that? Well, that's, you know, I think those are the things that come up, and I think the fact that, you know, can they win without making shots, or can you count on them to make shots now?
Yeah.
I think that they found enough ways to score on their best night, but I still worry, you know, relative to them that you know, that offense might be an issue in certain circumstances. You know, when they play Tennessee, it's an issue.
Yeah.
And they guarded the heck out of Tennessee in the home game.
Yeah.
They really did. They competed hard. They guarded great. But they couldn't score because Tennessee's really good defensively and really physically tough. You know, there might be another Tennessee out there.
I think it's interesting, the Ole Miss game, which I know you missed, there was some physicality. There was some, and look, if you look at this Kentucky team, they are thin as rails. I mean, it's not that they don't have strength. They're just small. They're tall and they're small. There aren't those big broad shoulders of, say, a Bam Adebayo. And it kind of makes a difference when you're going against a team like Tennessee that is broad, that not only has strength, but they're just wide. They take up space. One of the things earlier this year, and I think it may still be an issue to some degree, is Kentucky's defense. They are third best 3-point field goal defense in the country. So they're doing that well, though I tend to think that's more of a case sometimes of how well the teams we're playing against can shoot. Maybe we don't go against great shooting teams, but when we come to containment on the perimeter, that's an issue that's been bothering us all year, is can we keep the drivers out on the perimeter, and is our help defense rotating fast enough? And against Arkansas, we saw some of that, but not necessarily enough of it to go against, you know, the Tennessees, maybe the Florida team, which we have to play next.
Right. Yeah, Chioza in the first game was so terrific. And, again, that comes down to the fact that, what I talked about with Shea, Quade is not as physical, I mean, as some guards, and that may be a few years away for him to be that player where you can, where, you know, you, he can be strong enough that guys can't drive it past him. So that's, you know, I think that's a real challenge. Chioza, I think, is maybe, you know, because his stats aren't glorious, is one of the more underrated players in the country. And I think that's a real challenge, but it's a good challenge for them because, you know, look, they're not going to win the league. I mean, that's over, right? So it's good for them to have to go down on the road and play against a guy that demands that they deal with him. I mean, that whatever happens on Saturday, they got to deal with that guy because he's an insistent player. He is in your deal. So you have to deal with it. I think that's great. I think this is a really great experience for this Kentucky team to have to go through that as they go toward the SEC tournament. You know, and I think this is a year in which the SEC tournament really matters to Kentucky.
Yeah.
I mean, it's not a kiss-off year. This is not 2012. I mean, they can gain a championship, which they can't get in the regular season,
right?
And they can improve their stock for the NCAA tournament.
Give me on that line, and this is the last question I want to ask. We're talking to Mike DeCourcy, the Sporting News. Give me real quick, about 30, 45 seconds of how good really is the SEC this year? I mean, have they made leaps and bounds, and how good are they?
Leaps and bounds, absolutely. Now, what may happen is that there may not be a lot of great NCAA tournament success. There may not. I'm not promising that. It does have to see a bracket to know, or at least even get an idea.
Yeah.
There are no teams in the league that you look at and say, that team is a definite, you know, they're going to go a long way in March. But there are really, really good teams very deep into the league, and that's a huge progress from the past. And they may do well in the tournament. Yep. I don't want to hear anybody say it, like if there's only one or two Sweet 16 SEC
right.
teams, well,
it's
it was never
year.
That good to begin with.
Mike DeCourcy, the Sporting News. Appreciate you, Mike. Thanks always.
All right, you bet, Cam.
All right, we're going to be right back. Last segment coming up, the Leach Report served up by Wild Egg. Welcome back to the Leach Report. Last segment, real quick segment. By the way, I just put up a poll on @CameronMills, my Twitter account, about where you as a Kentucky fan would like the SEC tournament to be held. It's in St. Louis this year, which is seemingly an odd place, though it's very, very close to a lot of our Big Blue Nation brethren down in Western Kentucky. Not too far. Typically it's in Nashville. Atlanta's my favorite place, but where is your favorite place for the SEC tournament? So thanks to everybody for listening to the Leach Report.
Thanks
Cameron Mills filling in. Leach Report pulled up by Wild Egg.
Make sure you check out the podcast page at TomLeachKY.com whenever you miss a show. And be sure to follow the Leach Report Facebook page. If you have a question for Tom, email it to LeachReport@gmail.com. See you next time, right here.